Program being recorded on Christmas Eve 2014. Been taking it nice and slow today, doing charts. Spent most of the day in Dominic's cafe setting up the charts for the last three signs of the audio series: Cancer, Gemini, and Taurus. I work my way backwards through the zodiac for some reason, spiritual reason. One thing I haven't said lately is that there's this document that's emerged from the very old schools of astrology, seemingly directly from the Hermetic tradition. Since Hermes himself is mentioned as one of the founders of astrology, kind of a crazy thought that we might be doing something that the great god Hermes has passed on to us directly. That would be awesome fun. And sometimes it seems like it's just too good to have been just invented by somebody with a bunch of symbols and some paper to write with. And that document is called the Thema Mundi, Thema Mundi. And why this document is so meaningful to you is because the Thema Mundi, the chart of the world, Thema being chart, Mundi being the world, has Cancer rising. Cancer's on the first house of the chart of the world. Now, this is a teaching chart. It is a kind of an example chart. It's not, people have looked and have not been able to find a time when the planets were positioned in the way that they are on the chart, which is Cancer rising, Moon in Cancer, Gemini second, Mercury in Gemini, so forth. Rather, Sun second, Leo second, Sun in Leo, Virgo third, Mercury in Virgo, and so forth, the natural chart. You can look it up, and I'll scribble a little note on here to post. Thema Mundi article exclamation point. Hopefully I remember that. Okay, so now here's the thing about this. Normally when people do astrology, and this is was a common method of teaching astrology in the 70s, the quote-unquote 12-letter alphabet, thank you Zip Dobbins, which said Aries is the first house is Mars, period. Taurus is the second house is Venus, period. And it was oversimplified, seemingly accurate, because Mars is the first sign, corresponds to the first house. There's definitely similarities, rather Aries, and Mars is the ruler of Aries, and so forth, except for one little problem. In perhaps the oldest teaching document that we have, going back to antiquity, your sign is the sign rising. And since learning about this about 10 years ago, a little bit less, I thought, this is just a radical discovery. I mean, think of the difference in the world. Were humans actually oriented on the sign Cancer as their primary source of identity, rather, for example, Aries as the primary sign of identity? Ah, well, maybe we're not so inherently warlike. Maybe we really are more about taking care of the brood and raising our family and raising food and making sure there's enough to eat. Maybe it's not all about massacring other tribes. Maybe those are the exceptions and not the rules. Maybe there is something a little weird about how violent the planet is. And maybe you would have to corrupt people to get them to be like that. So in one sense, Aries rising certainly does seem to describe the planet that we live in today. But if you go back to this earlier model of a person, an earlier model of the cosmos, an earlier concept of the world, your sign is the sign rising. And so this, to me, connotes a strong orientation between your sign and the, let's say, ideal and balanced state of the world. It gives you a tremendous advantage in terms of how you orient and organize your life, because the world in an ideal state is more like you than it is unlike you. And it can seem, based on this kind of new Aries rising model, quite unlike you. You're not interested in feuding with your neighbors. Disagreements, they happen. Confrontations, they happen. Is that the way of life that you would choose? I cannot imagine it. Are you a bit competitive? Sure. Why not? But that's different than crushing, marauding, conquering, destroying, all for its own sake. You kind of got to be a little competitive to do something like, even like raise food, grow crops. You have to, in a sense, be in harmony with nature in one way, but be ahead of the game another way. Your particular orientation on existence gives you an advantage on existence, but it's also about making sure that you perceive the world from the most helpful point of view. Which leads me to a theme that I want to start with, having had said that as something of a preamble. You know how you meet these young people and they're like maybe in their second or third year of school, and you say, what do you want to do? And they say, well, I want to be a lawyer and I want to go into the legal system and change the system from within. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into politics and I'm going to be the politician who does not act like all the other politicians. I'm going to be the one who uses my power on the inside to make a difference that I would not ordinarily be able to make. And I hear this, though I hear it a little bit less, but I've heard it a few times, wish them luck. And, you know, I don't say things like, oh, you know, you're going to graduate with $250,000 of debt. Actually, you're going to do what makes money initially, because if you don't, the bank is going to foreclose on you and, you know, you're going to have bigger problems than you would ordinarily. And yet, the nature of our times is about changing the world from within. The question is, what is within? And I would say that within is yourself, and that the people who are the most adaptable and who have the greatest capacity for growth and the greatest capacity for integration into complex systems while maintaining their individuality, those are the people who have the potential to change the system from within. You are one of them. And the story of your life these days is all about that kind of evolution, that kind of process, that kind of experiment where you become the change that you want to see in the world, as is famously attributed to Gandhi, but the quote is apocryphal. And no one really knows who said it, but we at least attribute it to the spirit of Gandhi. But I don't think he actually said that. Still, it's a great idea, right? It makes perfect sense. And somebody as smart as Gandhi might have said that. Become the change you want to see in the world. Be the world. Become the world. And when we look at these massive transits through your first, seventh, opposite the first, and tenth houses, that is all about becoming the change that you want to see in the world, because these houses are extensions of you. The seventh is like the first house unfolded. The tenth is kind of like the first unfolded sideways, but still the same idea carries across. They're extensions of yourself. They're projections of yourself, one into a relational environment and one into kind of a mindset of achievement. They are you, and you are very rapidly becoming in the same style that the world is becoming, and you are blessed with a kind of an adaptation ability that is pretty unusual and pretty rare. So keeping that thought of changing the system from within, becoming the change that you want to see in the world, let's talk about one particular house, and then we'll check out the neighboring house as well. The house I'm looking at here is the third house, the third sign from yours, or if you're Virgo rising, the third sign from your rising sign. So we're using whole signs, no matter what, in this form of reading. You may know of differences in your natal chart, and I do assure you that the solar house system, counting from the sun, works concurrently with your natal chart, and that your natal chart works concurrently with the whole sign house system. So your houses may be, let's pretend that you're Cancer rising, but you've got Cancer through 20, Cancer rising at 20 degrees Cancer. You can look at your first house as beginning at 20 degrees Cancer. You can also look at your first house as beginning at 1 degree Cancer, which is what the whole sign house system suggests that you do. And you will get interesting stories out of all three of these charting methods. No one is absolutely right in all circumstances. Rather, they are variously applicable to different circumstances, and they tell slightly different versions of similar stories. In any event, looking at the third house, Virgo, this is your mind, your ideas, your communication skills that present themselves or are represented by the sign Virgo. And Virgo you might think of as the sign of information technology. The third house has that property. Things of a third house nature are typically communication and data processing devices. More emphasis on communication. The third is more like email and less like a gigantic mainframe computer that, for example, runs Walmart, which is what they have, a ginormous IBM machine that when someone buys a stick of gum in a Walmart in Topeka, Kansas, someone puts that stick of gum back onto a truck somewhere in a warehouse. That's done by computer. The third house is more about communication. Gossip, email, mail, writing, written communication is an important part of the third. But you've got Virgo there. And so what we get with Virgo is the combination of communication and data processing ability. A couple of messages come through here. One is, it is essential that you harmonize yourself with your technology environment. There is all the success indicated, all but assured, all but promised in your charts. There is really no promise in astrology, but there are strong assurances. That's what you've got. And Virgo on this house is saying that the means to your success is going to involve technology, the capacity to store and retrieve data and to communicate, the ability to organize information, the ability to focus. And further, the transits that are now taking place through Virgo are saying that the capacity to really focus is absolutely essential, and that you have in many ways turned over a whole new volume of your life where now this ability, this natural inbred gift that you have to be in harmony with the technology of your time. And I would say that this is as interesting of a time to be in harmony with the technology of your time as it was during the evolution, the early evolution of the printing press, cold type, letterpress type, way back at the beginning. The nice thing about now is, you know, what were there? You know, one printer per thousand or more people? Well, now this technology that we have is extremely populist. Anyone can take it up. The computing equipment that I am sitting with, including the audio, video, data storage capacity that I've got on this little desk, not the greater of my desks, the humbler of my desks, blows out of the water. For example, the Wall Street Journal of 1985, or a major radio station of 1995. The ability to do all these different functions, edit movies, edit radio programs. And now this technology is in everyone's hands. You may have some slight Luddite tendencies, because after all, you are the kind of person who'd rather have food on the stove and take care of people than, you know, for example, have your mind inside some kind of operation of how, you know, what's the best format for, you know, a 10 terabyte storage system. Nonetheless, whatever your seeming tendency may be, I strongly suggest you harmonize with, develop your talent for, expand your capacity for, and invest in technology, because this is a major key to your success. It is a point of grounding. That is to say that what keeps you anchored to the earth and anchored to your sense of mission in this time of change is a modicum of what I will reluctantly call control, because really is not that much control, but where technology is concerned, there is some concept of control that's helpful to work with. That's where you get it. And as part of this, disciplining your mind is crucial. Being able to maintain absolute focus and to cultivate your writing skills as if it was the most important thing that you could do for yourself. You are probably naturally a very good writer, and I would say that there is lots of potential you have to cultivate, to develop that skill, and to, in a sense, become that skill. And there is an economy of words that is indicated, where the ability to say the precise thing that needs to be said, to say the right thing at the right time, will enhance your ability to reach outward, outward, outward with whatever it is that you're doing. And also the written word, and we could say the written word when published and entered into a feedback experience, that is to say people read it and then you hear what they say, enhances your ability to envision something that I have mentioned in particular, that in the first couple of months of 2015 is vital that you work on the envisioning process, on the process of seeing what you can become. And one of the ways you do this is through a feedback loop of writing and response, of basically typesetting and publishing in the numerous forms that takes. And so this is not technology that exists for its own purpose. This is not self-serving technology. And there's lots of examples of that, and you know, they could all be argued down in some way as not really being self-serving, but we all know that many people and organizations use and make and consume techno for its own sake or just for the sake of generating profit. This is about generating relationships, really. And those relationships are based on interest, and they are based on ideas. And so there is a kind of propagation that you are involved with. And I assure you that the field of recipients, the ground that you are cultivating with your ideas, your vision, and your message is fertile ground. Very, very fertile ground. Okay, so let's back up one house for a second here. There is there's some money in this chart. There is a great opportunity to prosper in this chart. I would say that the conditions I've been describing will keep that sense of prosperity grounded in reality. But working from the inside out, the way that you will tap into that prosperity is to be clear with yourself about what your value is, not in the abstract sense, oh, I'm worth $50 an hour, but rather what your value is in community, in relationship, in actual commerce and exchange. That is to say, I have this value, and that value expresses itself as the ability to solve problems, as the ability to take this person's brilliant idea and make it public in a way that they don't have a way to do themselves. My value is I can do this kind of a job, and it enables someone to profit in a way that would have been impossible, and in the process of that, facilitates service. So what I'm saying here is that your value is not an abstract thing. Your value is not a number. Your value is actually something that is demonstrable. And the thing to focus on, in a sense, where the money is, but the thing to focus on is the demonstrable quality of your value, the place where you fit the scenario and can make something happen, and that becomes the way in which your monetary value is therefore assessed and what you have the ability to, quote-unquote, charge other people. Now, this is not an especially subtle difference. It is the difference between being entitled to something and knowing where you really stand with the world. Very big difference. Entitlement is not going to work for you. What is definitely going to work for you is an understanding of the ways in which you are able to make yourself integral to a situation, hold that space, and be valuable. I mean, an example from my own life is, well, my horoscope is worth money, and the reason that it's worth money is it guarantees that people will pick up the magazine. That's something. That is something that a publisher can take to the bank. As part of that, I then do work of the highest caliber and highest integrity for them, unrelated to the fact that people are going to pick up my column. I just do it for its own sake. That becomes the thing that they pick up, and then everyone's interests are served. So there is one example of how that value thing actually works. Okay, now a couple of other houses to look at here. Let's end this section, this audio section, with a discussion of houses 6 and 12. Houses often are better analyzed in pairs. This picks up the theme of the value integral integration thing, because in a moment I am going to talk about Saturn and its movement into house 6, which for you is Sagittarius. But let's start with 12, the house that is right before your house, and the one that is sort of like what I think of as the hidden self. Houses and signs and all that, none of this stuff stands on its own. And when one of the reasons I can be thorough in a reading like this without a birth time is that I'm capable of, have invented a method of, basically reading the entire chart, rather than just reading one sign, what's going on in one sign. So when I look at, for example, the sign Cancer, your sun or rising sign, I look at it completely in context. And one of the most important contexts of any sign is the sign that comes before it, because that is the sign of what I would call the veiled self or the hidden self. Turns out that there is quite a bit in here. There is an enormous amount of potential that is in Gemini. And Gemini is a really interesting house to have in the 12th because it talks about this ability to perceive yourself in several different ways internally. You are not stuck with one inner reality. Rather, you have options open as to how you see yourself, and that's one of the reasons that you have options open in how you express yourself, because you are able to kind of slip into different characters in a fully authentic way, because you actually do contain those possibilities, and that is a benefit of having Gemini on the 12th. And in the main planets we find in Gemini at the time of the sun's ingress, right at that summer solstice point in the northern hemisphere, winter solstice in the southern, sun square Tropic of Cancer in the north, are Mercury and Mars. Mercury is an interesting thing here because it's the ruler of Gemini and it's tucked into the 12th that's in this sign. And there's something here about caution, about what you reveal and to whom you reveal it. I am not at all saying don't, but what I'm saying is that what you reveal must be revealed selectively and in its fully appropriate time, and that the appropriateness factor is a factor of truth. There is an integrity test that every statement or concept or idea or opinion must be subjected to by you prior to your letting that cat out of the bag. So this is saying, hold on to what you suspect, hold on to what you think, hold on to what you believe until you have reached a certain threshold of certainty. There is also a caution here about never telling a knowing lie. Now, never is a powerful word, and there are times when it is legitimate to deceive people. You know, Mr. Policeman says, "Do you have anything I should know about?" You say, "Well, no, officer." I personally don't think that that's bad karma. However, deceiving to gain an advantage over someone, deceiving to cheat someone in some way, all things you might not do ever, but, you know, it's possible. There is a strong caution against that. That caution extends to, for example, various financial affairs and being truthful and accurate on statements and disclosures and making sure that you have the documentation here. This is not a massively powerful aspect in your chart this year, but it has the possibility to grow out of proportion if its spirit is not honored. So it's a very precise square between Mercury, ruler of your 12th, and Neptune in Pisces, modern ruler of Pisces. So it does get quite a bit of power based on the fact that it is involving ruling planets of signs, and that it's precise, that it has exactitude. And so there is what let's just call working with the confidence factor, that when you make an assertion that you assess, you know, crudely on a scale of 1 to 10, your confidence level, and that maybe you don't say anything until you reach a confidence level of 8 or 9. And even then you would say, yeah, and, you know, I would give this at least an 80% probability of being true, but who knows? You know, there's always, in a quantum universe, anything is possible. All right, so that caution given, please do remember that. And there may be additional interpretations for that. and we'll get to them eventually. Second major point in the 12th, that is Mars. And that Mars is in this unusual degree of the zodiac that I've been tracking now for about 12 years, since 2001. That makes it 14 years, time flies. And here's what Mars is saying. Mars at 29 degrees of Gemini conjunct the fixed star Betelgeuse. The message here is to assert yourself. The message here is to invest actual effort, drive, and motivation. There is a very high probability of success when you do. I have approximately a rating of 9 on the confidence scale when I say that. Why do I say that? It's got to do with the fixed star that's lurking behind Mars, and it has to do with having seen a shit ton of charts where this property worked, though it didn't always work in ways that you and I benefited from. It almost always has worked in the ways that the actor, the one initiating the action, has benefited from. And this is the also the delineation of Betelgeuse, one of the old fixed stars and considered a very positive fixed star. And you have Mars conjunct this in this fabulously powerful, precisely aligned chart for the Cancer solstice. And it is saying, make very direct efforts, but do not necessarily let people see exactly what you are up to. The suggestion here is to work behind the scenes as much as possible, to not announce your plans. Talking about ideas and visions is one thing, but when you say, I am going to try to buy that company, I am going to join that organization with the intention of becoming the leader of that organization, I am going to make that thing happen, those are specific plans that would best be kept to yourself and your closest confidants, and that you proceed when you have a high certainty factor that it is the right time to succeed. But basically what Mars at 29 Gemini is saying, lurking right behind the beginning of your sign, directly associated with your 10th house. Remember that Mars is the delegate, the ruler of your 10th house. And so everything I've said about the 10th house, all this stuff about holding space, devotion, dedication, service, making sure that you have addressed the issue of conditional love, for example, and that you address that issue by full commitment and dedication to service and all of that, aligning all of those things, make your moves. Assert yourself. Do not wait for things to happen. Don't just say, if I do the right thing, I'll succeed. This is about doing, actually setting out to succeed as you do the right thing, as the same thing. It's not so much about this thing about, you know, just kind of hanging out and doing what you love, as much as it is Mars involved saying, you must take action, and you must take action toward specified goals that you have set. All of this is in the context of an evolving vision, a changing environment, and a continual reinvention of yourself. But what enters the picture now, besides this volition thing of Mars, this go for it thing, go for it and succeed thing, is Saturn entering your sixth house. Possibly the most important new transit. I will definitely be picking up the thread of this in the written section, which I will do in about a week and a half, about this transit. But to sum this up, it is saying, concentrate your efforts, focus your efforts, organize your workspace, organize your company. If you have a company, work with structure. The balance of structure and vision is crucial for you now. That your vision not be kind of all over the place as much as you say, all right, this is the purpose, this is the structure, this is the proposed time frame, and this thing that you articulate is the vision that will be developing as a physical manifestation, Saturn, a structural manifestation. So it's kind of like the mission purpose in a big way, only it's the mission purpose codified in your soul and expressed every single day in your day-to-day activities. Kind of like this chart is kind of like the perfect chart of a startup company, only the mission may well have been going on for quite a while, only really you're always at the beginning, especially with transits this beautiful. You are always at the beginning, and you are at a beginning right now, a major, huge beginning. Okay, so on ending on that note of the concept of structure and of structuring your time, your workspace, and the tasks that you do, organized around a purpose, always. Function precedes form. The form something takes must be organized around the purpose at the center. The content of the website will dictate the structure of the website that surrounds it, because the purpose of the website is to deliver the content rather than the website being a container for the content, right? It's all a question of what you put first. And in your case, the vision, the content comes first, and the form will grow around it. All right. Exciting reading here. I would definitely check in with the readings for the other cardinal signs. Capricorn being about your relational environment, Aries being about profession, and Libra being about your home grounding and security environment. And apart from that, what are the... I would say that the Pisces-Virgo axis is going to be the one that's really the one that's got a lot of information, specific information about how it is that you will kind of integrate idea and the expression of idea. And in looking at these other houses, in these, you know, reading these, listening to these other readings and reading them, it's not exactly like I'm going to say, and oh, by the way, if you're Cancer rising, this applies to you. It may seem less specific, and you just have to cross that bridge yourself and let the words I'm saying set off ideas in your mind in a way very similar to the way this chart that I've assembled in front of me is setting off ideas in my mind. What I'm giving you is very close to the chart. I seem to interpret a lot, but I'm really not interpreting. I'm just able to rub these planets against each other and to study the context of you know, what that is doing there, what it feels like there in the context of that being there and what it feels like there, and spark off something original. And in a similar way, exposure to any of these ideas has that vector quality for you. So just kind of take the ride and take notes and let your mind go where it will, right? Let whatever you think while you're listening is a result of the vector of the reading, this kind of kinetic energy, this knock effect that is coming from these little friggin' ice cubes and gas bubbles, stars, and terrestrial worlds like Mars floating around in space. Go figure. All right, have fun. Merry Christmas. Bye for now.